All right, so imagine this, right? You're finally ready to settle into your dream home. It's all renovated, everything's perfect, except the contractor's got the keys.
Oh
And
no.
they're saying, nope, not get them until I get paid for some extra work. Talk about a major renovation headache. That's the situation we're diving into today headfirst with the case of Lowy v. United Pacific Insurance Co.
This one, yeah, Lowy. It's a California Supreme Court decision, and let me tell you, it's packed with lessons about construction contracts. Gold mine.
So this isn't just some homeowner squabble, right?
Not at all. This case goes way deeper. We're talking fundamental contract law here, specifically divisibility and substantial performance.
Ooh, legal terms. Love it.
But honestly, these concepts apply everywhere, not just construction. Knowing about them could save you a ton of trouble down the line.
All right, so the basics. We've got Marcus Lowy, he's the homeowner. He hires Arnold Wolpin, the contractor, for some work on his property. Excavation, grading, street improvements, the whole shebang. Sounds pretty standard, right?
Sounds like it, yeah, until you realize the contract's split into two parts, two exhibits, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so Exhibit A covers the excavation and grading, fixed price, $73,500.
Okay.
Then you've got Exhibit B, that's all about street improvements, priced differently, though, per unit.
Two separate items, same order. Kind of like when you order a burger and fries. Why is that such a big deal in this case?
Well, think of it like this. The separation, that's the whole foundation for the divisibility question. Like, can the court look at these two exhibits as totally separate deals, even though they're technically in one big contract? That's huge.
Gotcha. Stage is set, two parts to this contract. But the plot thickens, doesn't it? Wolpin, he finishes almost all of the excavation and grading. We're talking 98%. Practically done.
Almost there.
And then boom, disagreement over payment for some extra work, and the
Yeah.
project just stops.
Yeah, and gotta mention, this extra work wasn't even originally planned. Apparently, Lowy, the homeowner, made changes, which meant more work for Wolpin. So you gotta wonder about who's really responsible for this whole breakdown.
Right, because Wolpin's saying, hey, I had to do extra work, you didn't pay, so I stopped. And then Lowy's not having it. He goes and hires a new contractor, gets the last 2% finished, plus all the street improvements, and then slaps Wolpin with a lawsuit, breach of contract.
And Wolpin, he's not backing down either, countersues, saying, hey, Lowy's actions are what made me stop working. It's his fault. Full-on legal showdown.
So, how does a little construction dispute end up at the California Supreme Court?
Right. Well, in the trial court, they actually said both guys messed up.
What?
Yeah, both in breach. Lowy for not paying, hiring another contractor too early, and Wolpin for not finishing the job.
Okay, but it gets even weirder because the court still awarded damages to Wolpin. How's that even possible?
Now that's what we've got to untangle.
Okay, so we left off on a real cliffhanger there. Both Lowy and Wolpin are found in breach of contract, yet Wolpin still walks away with some cash in his pocket. How on earth does that happen?
Well, it all comes down to those key legal concepts we touched on earlier. Divisibility and substantial performance. The court had to really take this contract apart, see if it was one solid agreement, or if those two exhibits could be viewed as separate deals.
Okay, let's break that down then. Divisibility. I'm guessing that means the court's checking if the contract can be chopped up like
Yeah.
into independent chunks.
Yeah.
Kind of like I order a burger and fries,
Yeah.
right? I can still enjoy my burger even if the fries are like ice cold.
Exactly. You got it. And in this case, the court focused on some specific clues within the contract, those different pricing structures we talked about for Exhibit A and Exhibit B, remember, and those bonding requirements, plus the fact that the work itself was pretty distinct, all those things. They pointed to something lawyers call apportioned consideration.
Apportioned consideration. All right, that's definitely a phrase that needs some plain English translation. What are we really talking about here?
Basically, it means each phase of the work. So the excavation and grading versus the street improvements each had its own independent value. It's like the court decided these weren't two sides of the same coin, you know, more like separate transactions just bundled together. So even if one part goes sideways, the other part can still stand on its own.
That makes sense. So that's how the court justified treating this contract as divisible. But hang on, Wolpin still walked off the job, right? 2% of Exhibit A left unfinished. Can he really claim he didn't breach when he didn't fully finish?
And this is where substantial performance makes its grand entrance. It's kind of like a legal safety net for contractors who've acted in good faith, completed most of what's promised. Think of it this way. You're painting a house, yeah, you've done 98% of it, but oops, ran out of paint for that teeny last bit. Does that mean you haven't substantially performed the contract?
So even if they don't cross every T and dot every I, if a contractor's done most of the work, they might still get paid.
Yeah, that's the basic idea. The court looks at a few things. How much work's done? What's left unfinished? Was the contractor acting in good faith the whole time? It's not about being absolutely perfect, but more about making a real effort to fulfill the agreement.
And in this case, the court's like, 98% completion. That's good enough for substantial performance, especially considering that Lowy, well, he wasn't exactly playing fair, refusing to pay for the extra work, hiring a new contractor, practically forcing Wolpin's hand.
Precisely. The court really highlighted how Lowy's breach played a big part in Wolpin deciding to stop working. It's not like the contractor just bailed for no reason. There were legitimate reasons for hitting the brakes.
All right, so we've got divisibility, we've got substantial performance. Now let's get to the bottom line. Who actually won this case and what kind of damages are we talking about?
Well, the court ultimately sided with Wolpin. He got awarded the contract price for the excavation and grading, that $73,500, minus, of course, the cost to finish that last little bit, which, if I'm remembering correctly, was a measly $1,470.
Hold on. So Lowy ends up paying for most of the work, even though he's the one who filed the lawsuit for a breach of contract.
It might seem strange, but remember, the court said Lowy was the first one to break the agreement. His actions started this whole domino effect. And to make things even worse, remember that little clause in the contract about attorney fees?
Oh yeah, that's right. The winning party gets their lawyer's fees paid. So not only does Lowy pay for most of the work, he also gets to cover Wolpin's legal bills. Ouch.
Definitely highlight why it's so crucial to really think about your contracts, understand the legal nitty-gritty. Something that seems simple on the surface can have some serious consequences if things go sour.
No kidding. Speaking of details, I'm kind of curious about the street improvements, you know, from Exhibit B. Did Wolpin get anything for that? He never even started that phase of the project.
Good point. And the answer is, nope, he didn't. Court said Wolpin wasn't entitled to any payment for the street improvements simply because he hadn't done any substantial work on that part of the contract. Remember, substantial performance is about showing progress, making a real effort. Wolpin hadn't done either of those when it came to the streets.
So even though the contract was seen as divisible, Wolpin only won on the part where he had actually made some real headway. It's like the court saying, look, you can't just phone it in on one part and expect to get paid just because you did okay on the other part.
Exactly. You nailed it. This case really shows how important it is not just to have a well-written contract, but to actually hold up your end of the deal, act in good faith the whole way through.
Okay, we've untangled this whole divisibility and substantial performance thing, but I'm curious, what kind of impact did this case actually have on the legal world? Did it, like, set a big precedent, change how courts look at contracts?
Oh, the Lowy case. It's actually considered a landmark decision. It really solidified the concept of substantial performance in California law, and it's had ripple effects in other states too. Courts often look back at cases like Lowy to guide their decisions in similar contract disputes. It's like a legal compass, you know, pointing the way for handling these tricky situations.
So this wasn't just some random contractor fight. It actually helped shape how contract law is applied. Pretty amazing.
It really is. And it reminds us that the law is always evolving. Each case builds on the ones before it, and it creates this, like, complex, always changing legal landscape.
Speaking of legal precedents, I'm curious about some of those key quotes, you know, the arguments that really shaped the court's decision. Let's geek out on the legal details for a bit. Our law-loving listeners will appreciate it.
Oh, for sure. One quote that really stood out to me was, "Where full performance is excused by the other party's breach, the contractor may recover." It really hammers home the point that your own actions can come back to bite you. If you haven't upheld your side of the bargain, you can't just point fingers and yell, breach.
It makes total sense. You can't shirk your own responsibilities and then expect to hold the other person to every single letter of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And the court, well, they clearly saw right through Lowy's tactics.
Absolutely. And to support their decision, they actually referred back to a previous case, Haverty v. State Farm Mutual Auto in Esco. That case, it laid out a formula for how to figure out damages in these kinds of scenarios.
Oh, a formula for damages. That's intriguing. Break it down for us.
It's actually pretty straightforward. It's the contract price for the finished work, minus the cost to finish any remaining work, plus any other allowable offsets. So basically, it makes sure the owner doesn't overpay, and the contractor gets paid fairly for what they actually did. Pretty neat solution, if you ask me.
It seems like a pretty fair and balanced way to deal with these situations. No one's getting unfairly enriched. Everyone's held accountable.
Exactly. And the Lowy case, it really solidified this principle in legal practice. It's a great example of how courts can use those past decisions to make a more just, equitable legal system.
All right. So we've got the legal theory down, the precedents, the damages. Let's shift gears for a second, talk about practical takeaways. What can our listeners, especially those in construction, learn from this Lowy v. United Pacific saga? What can they do to avoid ending up in a similar legal mess?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways is to be crystal clear in your contracts. When you're laying out the different phases of a project and how much each one costs, don't leave anything to chance. Spell it all out, every detail, don't assume anything.
So if you want a divisible contract where certain parts can stand alone, that needs to be super obvious from the beginning, right? No room for confusion, no misinterpretations.
Exactly. Lay out those separate prices, bonding requirements, and make sure the work scopes are distinct, just like they did in the Lowy contract. But of course, try to avoid the whole dispute part altogether, if possible.
Right, because no one wants to end up in court. But what about from, like, a litigation perspective? If someone does find themselves in a contract dispute, anything from this case that could help them navigate that legal process?
Absolutely. Documentation is key. If you're the contractor and the owner's causing delays, making changes that mess up your work, write everything down. Emails, notes from meetings, photos. Keep a super detailed record of anything the owner does that might give you a reason to stop working.
So it's all about creating a paper trail that clearly shows what happened, when, and who's responsible for any snags or changes. If you do end up in court, you'll be thankful you have that proof.
You got it. That documentation could be the difference maker in proving that your work was hindered, maybe even excused because the owner breached the contract. It's about protecting yourself, making sure you have the evidence to back up your side of the story.
Now, what if the contract has one of those entire agreement clauses? Wouldn't that, like, override the whole divisibility idea, even if the phases are clearly spelled out?
That's a really sharp question, and it gets to the heart of how these things are interpreted. It would probably depend on the specific wording of that entire agreement clause and how it fits with the parts about the different phases. Sometimes those clauses are meant to stop people from relying on side agreements or promises that aren't in writing, but it doesn't automatically mean a court would just ignore clear signs of divisibility. This is where having a good lawyer by your side is super valuable. They can help you make a contract that really reflects what you want and reduces the risk of confusion down the line.
So the bottom line is, with contracts, clarity is king. You want that agreement to be well written, no room for doubt, and you've got to make sure it can't be misinterpreted. And if there's even a sliver of uncertainty, best to talk to a lawyer who knows the ropes.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Clear language, well-defined terms, and really understanding the legal side of things, those are your best tools for protecting your interests and avoiding costly disputes.
This has been such an eye-opening deep dive into the Lowy case. Our listeners now have a ton of knowledge about divisibility, substantial performance, and why good faith matters so much in contracts.
I hope so. And I'd encourage everyone to take their contracts seriously, understand what they're agreeing to, and get expert help if they need it. A little legal know-how can go a long way in avoiding headaches and getting fair results.
Before we wrap up, I've got one last thought-provoking question for our listeners to chew on. What if, instead of completely stopping work, Wolpin had just said, nope, not starting the street improvements until I get paid for that excavation? Would that have changed things? Would the outcome have been different? That's something to ponder. So we've really been digging into this Lowy case, all these twists and turns. But let's rewind for a minute. Imagine Wolpin took a slightly different approach. Instead of just, like, completely stopping all the work, he decides, okay, I'm going to halt the street improvements until Lowy pays me for that excavation. I think that would change things legally.
Oh, that's a clever one. You're getting into some interesting territory there, talking about good faith, duty to mitigate damages. See, the court probably would have expected Wolpin to, you know, keep going with the street improvements as long as they were totally separate from the stuff they were arguing about. You can't just stop the whole project because one piece is giving you trouble.
So even if part of the contract's a problem, you can't just hit the brakes on everything. You still got to keep moving on the parts that aren't directly involved in the dispute.
That's usually how it goes, yeah. Courts want people to be reasonable, try to keep the damages down. Refusing to do the parts of the contract that are divisible, especially if they're not part of the argument, could be seen as a breach in itself. It's like saying, oh, you didn't give me the exact blue paint I asked for, so I'm not building the house. That's not going to hold up in court.
So Wolpin might have actually hurt his case if he'd done that. He could have ended up being the one in breach, even though Loewy was the one who didn't pay initially.
It's possible, yeah. This really shows how important it is to know your legal obligations. Think strategically when things go wrong. Sometimes the best move is to keep doing your part of the deal while, at the same time, trying to fix the specific problems through legal channels.
Man, this Loewy case is like a legal maze. It's fascinating how one construction dispute can highlight so many crucial parts of contract law.
It really is a goldmine of lessons. Reminds us that, yeah, the law gives us a framework for solving disagreements, but the specifics of each case, they make all the difference. No easy answers.
Well said. We've talked about divisibility, substantial performance, good faith, even that duty to mitigate damages. Our listeners are walking away with a much better understanding of how all these concepts work in real life.
I hope so. And I really encourage everyone, keep those contracts super clear, make sure your performance is substantial, and keep your legal minds sharp.
That's great advice. Well, until next time, everyone, happy contracting. And remember, when in doubt, talk to an experienced attorney. They can help you navigate the legal jungle and protect your interests.